Hi, everyone. My name is Dr. Rita Roy, CEO at the National Spine Health Foundation, and I'm your host for the Get Back to It podcast, where we tell real stories of healing and recovery. What does it mean to get back to it? It means overcoming a spine problem through treatments that work in order to return to the people and activities you love, whatever that looks like for you. It means getting back to your life. We're here to share the success stories of those who did just that. And some of these stories, you're not going to believe. At the Get Back to It podcast, our goal is to tell stories of spinal champions who've been able to achieve a better quality of life through spinal health care. In today's episode, I'm thrilled to be joined by Peggy Schmidt Provenzano from St. Paul, Minnesota. Peggy had been dealing with scoliosis her entire life. She tried everything she could to not let this stop her from living a life of fitness and movement. Although her scoliosis did limit her at times, Peggy was able to fight through the pain. This all changed 10 years ago when she decided she had had enough. She underwent life-changing reconstructive surgery with Dr. Larry Lenke. The procedure greatly improved Peggy's quality of life, allowing her to return to one of her favorite pastimes, skiing, and to keep up with her grandkids. Stay with us as we hear firsthand about her struggles, her surgery, and the moment she finally stood tall, literally and figuratively. Peggy was only 14 years old when she found out she had scoliosis.
Oh, that was a long time ago. But first of all, Rita, thank you so much for allowing me to share my story and be a part of this podcast so that others can have a hopeful outcome. I truly appreciate it. My mom was a physical therapist and had worked in the field of scoliosis and polio. Through her work, she understood how the body performs. When I was a teenager, she determined that I had a little bit of a thoracic scoliosis, which is the sideways curve in the part of your spine that makes up your middle, upper and middle back, but not enough to do anything about it.
However, 13 years later, things escalated into something far more serious for Peggy.
When I was 27, I worked at PwC in Minneapolis. I went to the bathroom, leaned over the sink. Suddenly, I felt severe pain in my mid-back. It was so intense that I passed out on the floor. A good friend of me found me on the floor, called 911, and I was rushed to the hospital in an ambulance. At Abbott Northwestern Hospital in Minneapolis, a series of x-rays which indicated that my scoliosis appeared to be the cause of my debilitating pain that day at the office. I was given some painkillers and was sent home to rest. After a few days, I returned to work. I decided to initiate some strength classes for my core and my back. In addition, I did many other exercise classes, and it seemed to truly manage my symptoms.
Despite that scary situation, Peggy tried to live her life to the fullest. She tells us how she worked around her symptoms and what daily life was like.
Daily life was interesting. However, a critical moment was when, at age 40, I was standing next to my sister and someone else said, "You're shorter than your sister." I thought that couldn't be true since I've always been taller than my sister. Turns out the person was right. My scoliosis had caused the shrink. I decided to see a spine specialist. I made an appointment with Dr. Joe Para at Twin Cities Spine. Dr. Para discovered that my curve had increased to roughly 37 degrees. Fast forward 15 years, at age 55, my scoliosis had progressed to a shocking 75 degrees.
As Peggy's condition worsened, so did her symptoms. She noticed flare-ups of pain occurring more frequently. Her lower back, mid-back, and shoulders caused significant pain that did not subside. She tried everything she could to alleviate her symptoms: medications, massages, acupuncture, dry needling, and physical therapy. none of which provided adequate relief.
The pain would get so bad that I would have to take prednisone for a week to reduce the pain. This would temporarily keep my symptoms at bay. Despite all of this, I tried to stay active as I could. I thought that if I exercised, I could overcome my scoliosis. I did Pilates strength training. I truly loved to go on walks and runs. I was riding my bike, doing cross country and downhill skiing, and was even able to do a 6-mile run shortly before my debilitating symptoms.
At the time, Peggy had a friend who worked for a medical device company. This friend was familiar with Peggy's spine complications and wanted to help Peggy find relief. He strongly suggested that Peggy go for a consultation with Dr. Lenke, a specialist in spinal deformity surgery at Columbia University in New York City.
When I first met Dr. Lenke, he told me it was only a matter of time before I needed surgery. When I walked out of the office, I was not mentally prepared to go through the surgery. I waited 9 more months, then a herniated disc. The pain was incredible. I could barely walk, and standing was very difficult. I knew I couldn't avoid surgery any longer and returned to Dr. Lenke's office to schedule the surgery.
Just before the surgery, Peggy had a 75-degree curve in her spine. She also had arthritis forming in certain parts of her curve, which added to her painful symptoms. She underwent a posterior-based total spine reconstruction from T3 to the sacrum and pelvis, with pedicle screws and rods used to nearly fully correct the scoliosis deformity. She also had 2 cages placed from the back into the front of the spine, with bone grafts placed inside at the lowest 2 levels of the spine to help stabilize and fuse those segments.
The first 48 hours after surgery was difficult. It was difficult to move without pain, and with increased movement, the pain was incredible. However, I believe that all the exercise I put in preoperatively helped me with a speedier recovery. I was only in the hospital for 4 nights. I flew back to Minneapolis about 2 weeks later and began my recovery journey. I was lucky I had an incredible support system around me, cheering me on. Every day, I would work to improve little by little and push my activity level up a little harder each day. For example, I tried to walk up the length of our long driveway and see how far I'd get daily. I kept getting stronger. 1 year later, I was able to ride my bike 25 miles. The surgery changed my life. Even though I still have some modifications in my activities, I got my life back.
Wow, Peggy. Peggy, it is so inspiring to hear about you persevering through your pain for so many years before you had your scoliosis surgery. You know, I, as I sit here and I look at a beautiful, healthy, vibrant, smiling face looking back at me on the screen, it is hard to imagine the amount of metal that is in your body. You're a bionic lady. And to think about that journey of what you went through throughout your life, to bring you to where you are now is really, it's truly remarkable. I have so many questions. There's so many things I think about. The first thing that pops to mind for me is, if you had it to do over again, would you have put off surgery for that long?
Not a chance. I would have eliminated a lot of pain in my life if I would have done it earlier. What you're doing now is what I needed. I needed people to talk to. I needed to see that there was life after this major surgery.
Yeah, that's incredible. It's, you know, it's very hard for people to make these decisions. And you sometimes worry, will I be worse after the surgery? I mean, maybe I can put up with this pain. Maybe it's not so bad. Maybe I can push through it. And I think the fact is that for most people, modern spinal surgery is a miracle. And people are better, for the most part, most people are better once they are in the hands of a well-trained surgeon with the right diagnosis and the right treatment path. And that takes time to figure out. I think there's definitely an emotional component of making these decisions. Can you talk with us a little bit about that, Peggy?
Yes, I will. I think the most important thing really in who is going to do your surgery, you need a surgeon who does this regularly, like once a week, twice a week. Experience counts, I believe, in these huge surgeries. I was in surgery for 13 hours.
Wow.
There was a lot going on.
Yeah.
And without a well-trained, well-versed surgeon, I don't believe I would have had the outcomes I had today.
Yeah, that's incredible. Let's back up a little bit, Peggy. You had the good fortune of having a mom who was a physical therapist. So when you were first diagnosed in adolescence, which is typically when a lot of people get diagnosed, you know, at that point, you probably knew more than what most people know about scoliosis and how to deal with it and manage it. And again, you grew up in an era where you were encouraged to be very physically active. So what were your expectations as a young person of what would happen with your scoliosis over time?
Oh, Rita, unfortunately, I think I had a serious case of denial. I actually felt that I could exercise my way out of my scoliosis and could reduce the symptoms. So I just continued to do more exercise. I added Pilates. I did core strengthening. I was doing cycling. I just anything I could to keep moving, which at the end of the day, I believe was a huge benefit.
Yeah, for sure.
I went into surgery really, really strong. As strong as I could have been.
Yeah, that's incredible. And you know, a lot of times a surgeon will tell a patient to prehab, right? So try to get in as good of shape as you can before the surgery. And that makes the recovery better. And that just feels like it's common sense to think about that. But at 14, your symptoms weren't horrible. And so, you know, in many ways you were lucky because you developed habits that were really good for you. So really embracing exercise, leaning into that. And, you know, fast forward, I think about that moment when you were at work and you collapsed and were rushed to the hospital in an ambulance. That had got to be absolutely frightening. Talk to us about what that moment was like and what your thoughts were at the time.
It was extremely frightening. And they couldn't find my husband because it was pre-cell phones.
Oh.
Which just seems like a stitch at this point. So the woman who found me on the floor, who actually was a very good friend and continues to be a good friend, went in the ambulance with me because nobody else knew who should go with me.
Right.
And she is a very competent woman, but I just couldn't believe it. And I thought, well, I'm just having a severe back spasm. Mm. And I can remember going home and laying on the floor because someone told me that it was good to be on something that was hard. So I slept on the floor for a couple of days.
Oh my gosh.
Took a few pain pills and went back to work.
Wow.
And didn't really think a lot of it. And, you know, we had been doing some activities that I thought could have spurred it on. However, I don't think I was listening to the doctor completely when he was telling me about my scoliosis.
Interesting.
I had everything else going on in my brain about the activities I had done, what I had participated in, working too much, all those things
were
the cause. not.
And that's amazing that when you're in that moment and you're meeting with, you know, with a spine expert, really, you know, any doctor, I think really, but I'll put myself in your shoes, because when I was a patient with the back spondy, and my surgeon was talking to me about the fact that I needed to have a fusion to fix this thing, and this would, you know, take care of any paralysis I was having. I didn't hear anything he was saying. I just couldn't hear it. I didn't remember what he said. And I'm a medical person. I trained in surgery, and I became a patient who just couldn't. All I could think about was my kids, my family, how am I going to do this? What's going to happen to me? I couldn't hear what he was saying. And I think that's such a tough place to be. And part of why we do what we're doing is, you know, is to provide an outlet and a place for people to come and meet others and hear stories and get informed, so that when they do get in front of their doctor, they can maybe have a list of questions and write them down and take notes and remember what's being said. Because that's just,
you know, I would have a couple of things I would like to add to that.
Yeah.
If you're going in and, you know, you're doing follow up or whatever, and you look like you're headed towards surgery, or even what you need to do to actively recover prior to or get ready for, to have at least one other person in the room, sometimes two people.
Because such a good point. Yes.
You kind of need to sift yes. through what's been said. Because as the patient, you're just thinking, how am I going to get out of this? I don't want to be doing this.
Yes. Yes. And you're thinking about recovery and what's that going to be like, and how are you going to get to the grocery store, and how are you going to do the laundry, and, you know, like all those just sort of daily living things,
right,
that you just think, how am I going to do that? And yes, that is such great advice, to have somebody with you at those doctor's appointments, to yes. be a note taker and to be another set of ears to hear what's being told. And it's all just new information, right? When you're first going through it, it's just,
it is. And, you know, despite the fact I had had it for years, I really didn't know a lot about it.
Interesting.
And that's sad.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of a forever learner. But I think, again, I'm going to use that denial word. I was just like, I'm getting myself out of this, which is not right.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of people can relate to that. You know, surgery is not necessarily the first thing that's recommended to people. And it's not necessarily the right thing for everybody with a spine condition.
Right.
And so I think, you know, you're right to think, maybe I don't need surgery. Maybe that's not going to be the right thing for me. I think, you know, share with us, Peggy, Dr. Lenke was recommending surgery for you, and he said something to you when you were hesitant to have your surgery.
When I had my first appointment with Dr. Lenke, he indicated right away that I needed surgery. And he didn't say as soon as possible, but he inferred as soon as possible. And I was there like, no, I'm not ready for surgery. Just, I cannot do it right now. And he looked at me dead on and said, you will know when you are ready.
Wow.
And 9 months later, I had the incident that was, I knew I yeah. was ready. And I would have gone through, honestly, anything at that point in time to relieve the pain, because the pain was horrible.
Yeah. So it was really the pain that got you there.
Yes. You know, I am not a real, I started out at 5'4". I ended up under 5 feet.
What?
And now I'm a little bit, I'm 5'1 and a half or 5'2". So I'm still down a good couple of inches. But, you know, I kept shrinking and I still didn't do anything.
Oh my goodness. Well, and that, you know, the denial, the not wanting to have, you know, a big procedure and fears about what that could look like. And the fact that you were in really great shape. I mean, you actually yeah. were in really amazing shape. So that allowed you to kind of persevere, and the pain was tolerable, yeah. manageable.
Yeah. I mean, 2 weeks before I had the slipped and herniated disc, I had run Crazy Legs in Madison, Wisconsin, which is up a huge hill, down the Fraternity Row and into Randall Field. It was so much fun. But that's what I did 2 weeks before I slipped and herniated my disc.
So there you have it. And so, you know, I think one of the things that the experts tell us is that, you know, you don't want to ever rush into surgery. That's never the right answer. Unless, of course, it's a trauma or, you know, some situation like that. But you also don't want to delay the surgery for too long if it's inevitable, because you run the risk of nerve damage that can be, you know, irreparable, right? And so if you wait too long, your options begin to narrow. So there's sort of this sweet spot in there where the damage is bad enough, surgery is inevitable, but you don't want to wait for too long because it makes it a harder procedure then for the operative team.
Absolutely. And I have permanent nerve damage. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's just a fact of life. And that's on me. It's not on anybody else. It's the same thing that caused me to go to see Dr. Lemke right before surgery. And I had done permanent nerve damage.
The nerve damage is not severe enough that you're not able to do everything that you want to do in life. That's the good news, right?
Oh, the good news, Rita, is I get to do whatever I want to do, pretty much. Maybe a few within limitations, but I have figured out how to live my life to the fullest and do what I want to do.
You're living life on your terms, Peggy, and that's the key there. You know, I think another remarkable thing about your story, Peggy, is that you had this surgery 10 years ago.
I did.
10 years ago. At that point, you really were sort of out of choices. Like, you had to have the surgery or you were going to risk being disabled, probably.
You know, I would have been in a wheelchair. That was exactly where I was headed.
Too young to be in a wheelchair at that age. What? And so a lot of people will say, well, I don't want to have surgery now because I know the technology is getting better. Right. And so a lot of the experts will say, well, yes, technology continues to improve, but what we have now is really good. I think that if you had put that surgery off for 10 more years, waiting for advanced robotics to be here or some other, you know, technical advances that have been here, you wouldn't have the option to have a surgery.
No, I would not. And you have to measure that with a fine tune line, because you don't want to have it too soon, but you don't want to exceed your opportunity to recover well.
Right.
And I have recovered well. Yes, I have nerve damage. I have a few other little things, but I can pretty much do whatever I want to do. You know, I may look awkward a little bit getting off the floor because you don't have the curve of your back or something like that. But yeah, that is so minor in the big picture of life.
But the fact that you can sit on the floor and get up from the floor,
there's a good thing.
Right? I mean, that.
Yeah. I mean, that's a good thing.
Right?
I do a very public workout class that does running, rowing, and lifting. I don't run, I power walk. But when I get to the point where I have to lift and you're on the floor, I must look like I'm 100 years old getting off the floor compared to all the 20 and 30 somethings in the class. But I put my blinders on and I don't even care. I just think, I am here. I am working out. I am doing the best I can.
That's amazing. And that's the victory.
That is
that
victory.
You're there.
Yeah.
And, you know, let's face it, there are a lot of people at your age, Peggy, that haven't had a spine condition, don't have their entire backs fused, and they can't do it either.
No.
So, you know, the fact that you've been through what you've been through and you are participating in those classes is, that's, you win. You win.
I win.
You win.
I win. And, you know, you have to have a little bit of a no cure factor.
Right.
And I, you know, I have said I'd like to have a shirt that has my spine before and after on the back. So I have a reason I'm getting up like this. You really have to shut it off and say, no, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. And no one's judging. And everyone, we all have our own journeys. And especially in this era of social media and, you know, comparisons and comparing yourself to others, we have to remember, to your point, put the blinders on, focus on self. And it's like, you do you, right?
Yes.
You do you. And fortunately, you get to be the best version of you that you can be. And that's a gift. It's such an amazing thing.
It is absolutely a gift. And one of the things that I've noticed through, you know, recovery of, you know, like in the beginning, they tell you no bending, lifting, twisting, or squatting. Well, the good news is they told me I couldn't do it for 4 months. I couldn't bend, lift, twist, or squat prior to surgery. I was like, wow, how do you not do those things? Well, guess what? When you're recovering, you really can't do a lot of bending, lifting, twisting, or squatting. So your body itself limits you. And then once you're beyond that point, you're recovering and you can do those things again.
Right, right.
And your mind, there are things that I know I put my socks on a little differently, but I don't remember how I used to put them on. The brain just works its way through whatever you now have.
And I think, you know, what I would say to that, Peggy, is that as we age, our mobility changes anyway, right?
Absolutely.
So it's going to be,
absolutely,
you're going to do things differently in your 50s and 60s than you did in your 20s and 30s. That's just the normal part of aging. What you're able to do is you're able to do it. And so maybe it's different than other people. Who cares, right? Maybe it's different than you did it in your 20s. It was going to be different anyway. So
absolutely,
that's, you know, that's another thing that some spine surgeons will say. And my surgeon said to me, I can't make you 25 again, but I can make you the best 50-year-old that you can be.
Yeah.
You know, we can't reverse time, but we can give you life back so that you're not disabled and that you're able to live life on your terms. And that's exactly what you got, Peggy. It is remarkable. And we will put on the podcast images of your spine, if you give us permission to do that, because it is really remarkable for people to see what we're talking about here, that your entire back was reconstructed with metal. Mm-hmm. And that's just part of you now. And you just can't tell. And I'm sure that, you know, people will look at you in those gym classes or just going through life and have no idea what you've been through and how you got to where you are.
You know, there is that side of what you've been through, but where did I get? And that's the good news.
Yeah.
I will always be thankful for modern medicine.
Yeah. Yeah. That's amazing. So Peggy, what are your favorite activities now? What are you enjoying the most?
You know, well, I had 5 granddaughters in 3 years.
Wow.
I have a grandson too and 2 step-grandchildren. But, you know, those little people are my favorite things to do right now.
Yeah.
I still do a lot of the exercise classes that we talked about. I still do Pilates. I am going to be 70 this next year, and we've talked about what would you like to do. And I kind of want to go downhill skiing.
Do it. Take it slow. Take it slow.
No black diamonds for this girl. You know, and those are things you can do when you're younger, but almost anybody you talk to gives up that activity at some point.
I'm right there with you, and I'll just share my personal story. I did put skis on for the first time about 4 years after my fusion. And I thought I had just given up skiing. I was never going to ski again. And I grew up a skier. And I said, you know, I think I'm ready to try this. And I rented short skis, no long ski, you know, just short, almost beginner skis. I forgot how hard it is just to put the boots on, by the way. that was hard. I got my feet in the boots. And I got on my skis and I got on the chairlift, and I thought that my face would explode from joy. I just couldn't believe there I was doing it. And I, you know, stuck to the greens, and it was just a beautiful sunny winter day. And I took my time coming down that slope and didn't care who was around, what was happening, who was doing what hill or what run. I had a nice long green run and just enjoyed that moment. And honestly, your heart is so happy when you can do things that you thought you'd never do again.
Absolutely.
And I accommodated it, you know, but yes. I did it.
Somehow you do it. We are also, I've done a lot of biking in my life, put on a lot of miles. And this year we are doing a trip to Amsterdam to ride bikes through the tulips.
Wow.
That's a bucket list item for me, but I am able to do this.
I don't think I could do that. You've got to be in shape to do that. And biking is...
I'm going to cheat. We're using electric bikes.
A little boost, but still. I did that in California, in Napa, in the vineyards there. But you still sitting on a bike. I mean, that posture and, you know, it takes core strength to even be sitting on a bike, pedaling a little bit, even with an assist, it's still... That's rigorous activity. So that is awesome. I'm so excited for you. That's so great, Peggy.
Me too. Tulips are my favorite flower.
Oh, yay. Happy birthday. Oh my goodness. So Peggy, just as we're wrapping up here, you have your grandchildren. As you were going through your spine treatments, were you raising children along the way as well? No.
You know, I really wasn't. I was 56 when I had my spine fusion. Or was it 57? I don't know how old I was. But anyway, my children were all grown and all out of the house. I was still working full time. I've owned my own business for years. But my children were around a lot, all of them.
So that you mentioned that great support you had after your surgery.
Yes. And my best friend from 8th grade was around too. So between my family and my sister lived like three doors away. Yeah. So I was kind of covered on a lot of angles. And my husband was very, very supportive. And the lucky thing is, I think in the initial phases, and Rita, you might think this too, you block out what's going on in your home, things that might have been your standard. Well, they're not doing your standard.
you don't even care. Yeah. Doesn't matter
at all.
Right.
And there were times where I had to just get up and walk away because I'd fall asleep or I was so exhausted. I couldn't, you know, in that first month or so when you're on the heavier pain meds and
your body's
whatever.
Healing, all that healing.
Right.
It's tiring. Right. Your body needs that rest.
Right.
Yeah.
And I had some nerve damage, and that really was not easy in the beginning stages of recovery until I started taking gabapentin.
Yeah.
And then that's when I really started.
But that's what you need to do when you're recovering.
Right.
So
it's
temporary moment there. And it's hard going through it. The days are long, but you get through it. And I guess I had just one last question, Peggy, about your journey having, you know, had children and had a family. You know, in your younger years, as your scoliosis was progressing, did you have any back challenges with your pregnancies?
Hey, I remember laying on the floor in my office many times. So, yes,
you
did.
But you just accommodated, just dealt.
You know, I mean.
You just tell yourself, I'm pregnant. Of course, I'm uncomfortable or something like that. Right.
Yeah. I mean, I just didn't evaluate that stuff as seriously as I should have. And I can remember I had to lay on my side. There were all kinds of things I had to accommodate, but I regularly laid on my floor in my office. Thank goodness I had a private office. Otherwise, it would have been hard to explain.
Yeah, that's just amazing. I just think that speaks to your physical fitness, that core physical fitness that started as a young person, you know, your mom, again, physical therapy, understanding core strength. And, you know, you really did set yourself up to be successful when you finally got to the point where the curve was so severe, the pain was so severe, there was no question it had to be done.
Right.
And so there's a lesson in there.
And I feel like I was given the path to Dr. Lemke.
Yeah.
Who was really instrumental at the time. Now he has trained many others, and there are others that are wonderful. But I feel like I just had a path through a friend to Dr. Lemke.
Isn't that great?
And his team.
We call them healthcare heroes. They really are the heroes of our world, giving people their lives back. It's amazing the sacrifices they make so that we can have our lives back. It's incredible.
He has a nurse that, I mean, you could contact her and no matter what, 15 minutes later, she was back at you. I still contact her and have some interaction with her because I've been a champion for a few of Dr. Lemke's patients where she's asked me if I would do it. And she was on vacation. This might have been 2 years ago. And I sent her an email and she called me from vacation. I'm just like, no.
That's amazing. And to your point, that's such an important point. When you are identifying a care team to take care of you, you've got to have that feeling that they are going to take care of you. You've got to feel good about it. Trust your team and, you know, make sure that you have that good feeling. And if you don't, get another opinion and find a team that you feel great. You connect with the surgeon. And we all have different personalities. There's all different people out there. So find, you know, well-trained surgeon that's got all the qualifications who you feel comfortable with, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, if something doesn't feel right for you in your communications with your providers, then it might not be right for you. It doesn't mean you're wrong. They're right. You have options.
Yeah.
And more so than anything else, Rita, I think at the end of the day, I feel like we are responsible for ourselves and our healthcare. Mm-hmm. So we have to do what's best for ourselves.
And so to that point, to be our own best advocates for our own health, that's what National Spine Health Foundation is here to do, is to give people the information, the knowledge, the tools to support that decision making, because these are really tough decisions to make alone and to not know where to find trusted, real information that is actually really helpful as you're thinking through the process. What questions do I even ask? I don't even know what to anticipate, right? But to hear another person's story helps you think through what that pathway looks like.
I just remember my mentor that I found on the internet said to me, you know, how are you doing? And I said, I am absolutely scared out of my mind. And she kind of started laughing and she's like, you know, I'm here. I'm here to tell you that I'm okay.
Yeah.
And I'm 4 years out. So, you know, it's a journey.
Yeah. And Peggy, so are you mentoring patients now and serving in that capacity for people?
I am not. I just do them as Dr. Lemke's nurse needs somebody to do them. But I am more than willing to join your team of champions.
Oh, that's awesome. Thank you, Peggy. You are part of our Spinal Champion community, and we are thrilled to have you as a friend and a Spinal Champion and sharing your story with the world. I know that people listening to us are going to feel empowered and hopeful. So thank you for sharing so generously your time and your story and your vulnerabilities and your messages. It's really incredible. And congratulations to you. And happy birthday. Happy birthday.
Oh, thank you. That's a ways away, but you know, it's in a year actually, or next January. And I'm just like, my kids are like, what do you want to do?
You have options. You've got,
I have options. I don't know. I don't think I've zoned in completely, but I will be skiing sometime on my 70th year. I know.
Nice. Awesome. Peggy, it is such a pleasure to talk with you today, sharing this story with the community. teaches us about perseverance paying off when fighting for your spine health. You've taught us that no matter how long the journey takes, there is always hope for recovery. Thank you. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Rita, thank you. Thank you for being you, for being my friend, for what you do every day. It is making a difference.
At the National Spine Health Foundation, something we believe in most is providing hope for recovery through sharing stories of success and expertise. It isn't always easy to find someone to relate to, even though 100 million adults suffer from neck or low back pain each year. To hear more stories of spinal champion recovery and access educational materials about spine health, visit us at spinehealth.org. If you're interested in supporting our show financially, you can contribute at the link provided. Thank you for listening.